You are listening to The Crisis Beat with Dr. Mark Crowther and Brady Wood.
All right, hi, and welcome to The Crisis Beat. This is episode 5, and it's January 29th, 2023. My name is Brady Wood, and I'm a business owner and public relations professional. I'm here with my co-host, Dr. Mark Crowther, who in his other life is chair of medicine at McMaster University. Welcome back to the program, Mark.
Thanks, Brady. Wintry day here in Canada. Yet again, I suppose we should be used to that. That's where we choose to live.
It's a bit grim, absolutely. We're coming to you from a pretty grim locale. So hopefully those at home have a nicer view than I have right now of the snowstorm.
And we've seen that glowing orb in the sky like maybe twice in the last 8 weeks. So those of you who have actually seen the sun, please celebrate it because some of us are missing it desperately.
Yeah, I heard we get sun next Saturday, but it's also supposed to be minus 15. So a little sunny in a week's time. So Mark, I wonder any breaking news of the week that we wanted to get into before we get into our broader discussion. And this episode is called Nothing to Declare Airline Meltdown. So we're going to be talking about travel woes in the US and Canada over the holidays.
Yeah, I think there's, you know, as always, the news beat continues. You know, the extraordinarily unfortunate death of an individual at the hands of the police in Memphis has been the news this week, certainly generating a lot of news items. I think in general, we might do an episode on this in the future, pretty contentious, but the response to that in terms of the public relations crisis communication from the city's police department actually seems to be pretty good. It's hard to be able to get out from underneath the weight of a horrific event like that, but they seem to be responding as they should. We're going to talk about the airline stuff. The airline stuff just continues to ramify through everything. I see on the CBC News webpage today, it's the lead item. And it seems like more than just what happened over Christmas, it's actually starting to really percolate into the collective psyche about the quality of service by airlines. And then finally, I think the other thing that is just absolutely in the news is the Ottawa convoy and the problems with the people who occupied the center of Ottawa. It's a one-year anniversary. And as always, what seems to be a little tiny event in terms of its geographic restrictions seems to catch a lot more news than it probably deserves, to be quite honest. That's maybe my high-level summary. There's lots of other stuff you wanted to perhaps mention a couple there, Brady?
Mark, I think the one that jumped off to me as germane to some of our previous discussions was the Microsoft outage on, I believe it was January 25th. So I think Microsoft had kind of an outage that reverberated across its platforms. It happened between hours that North Americans would not have experienced it as much. So I think it was between like 2 and 6 a.m., something in that ballpark. So it was resolved fairly quickly. It did make national news. So I think that a lot of folks ended up receiving the news and thinking it was a bigger problem than it was. But I saw this as kind of a proactive, it felt proactive and positive in the sense that it was over and handled quickly and the problem clearly identified. So contrary to the Rogers outages that we've experienced in Canada, this one felt like one that everyone's anxious about because it's a core service to so many businesses, was over quickly and in fact seemed to be resolved by the time the news was reporting on it in North America. The other side of it, though, is I think when it comes to stock valuation and how the markets react, I think folks look to this news as indices for market making decisions. So I think that might be also why when Microsoft moves an inch, it causes reverberations. And I think that might be partly why it got a lot of media attention. But overall, I felt that looking at this one was a clean example of an outage that seemed to be resolved quickly. Now, I think the other thing,
Brady, I'll just say, sorry to interrupt, but the other thing that I would say that they did extraordinarily effectively, as soon as they became aware of it, they created a feed on their website. They had a ticket, and the advantage of that was they updated it in real time as they understood what was going on and as they proposed their solution. And so that kind of gets ahead of the rumors and innuendo. It's extremely effective the way they do this. I'm absolutely certain, given how enormous they are, that they have a staff that's just sitting there waiting for this to happen. So, you know, they don't have to call anybody in from vacation or fly them back from somewhere to get them to comment. They have appropriate people available 24/7, 365 at multiple sites around the world. They must, just by the speed that they responded. It really was handled extremely effectively.
And again, that's it. Kudos to them, but also that should be the expectation of a large tech company, in my opinion. So if you have multi-million people that you serve, you should be at the ready for outages and communicating about them effectively, for sure. Well, why don't we jump into our deeper issue? And again, this episode's called Nothing to Declare, Airline Meltdown. Airlines over the holidays lost baggage and canceled flights, as we've all heard about. one of the most renowned airlines on the planet, renowned for its culture, renowned for its financial outputs, Southwest, it really damaged its pristine reputation and revealed chronic underinvestment in systems at the company. Similarly, Canadian travelers were stranded abroad by the discount airline Sunwing. And then also passengers departing from Toronto Pearson Airport Terminal 3 had their baggage left behind and lost in the labyrinth at Pearson when the terminal sole conveyor belt failed. Mark, so we seem to have bad luck of one or both of us being victims of these crises as well. As you know, I went to Mexico a little after Christmas and I was on a WestJet flight. It was clear on arrival to the airport in Cancun that it was baggage chaos. And then as it turned out, something I never dreamed, I endured the entire trip without my luggage arriving in Cancun. And I think I got one of the checked bags back probably about 3 weeks ago. So I would say 2 to 3 weeks after we returned from the trip. And my travel companion has not received her checked bag yet. And my bag had been rifled through and her bag is missing in action. And of course, her bag was the bag that had expensive items in it, like laptop and jewelry and other things that one would want back. So I don't know if we should do WestJet first, but I would also say their communication has been quite spotty, and recovering the bags has been a challenge where they have what I found to be a complicated online system of entering tickets and things. So one thing I learned for sure is when you get those baggage tags and they have the sticker that they tell you to keep that says the barcode of your luggage, keep that sticker and put it in your passport. So I have not been one who's always done that. But having that code was essential to being able to recover the bag to some degree. Again, complicated process, poor outcome, poor communication in my mind on WestJet's part. But why don't we go into some of the other airlines, then we could circle back to WestJet. So Mark, Sunwing, this was another one where folks were literally stranded abroad for up to, I think, over a week in some cases. Do you have a little bit of insight more on what happened at Sunwing?
Yeah. So I think, from the perspective of the podcast, Sunwing has been a complete disaster from start to finish. Essentially, what happened, as I understand it from reading the news, again, I have no insider information, was Sunwing is an airline that in the summer flies domestic routes and back and forth to Europe, and in the winter flies to sun destinations, which you would understand if you're listening to the podcast from warmer climes is a necessity for many people in Canada, given that our winter starts sometime in mid-October and goes till sometime in early May in many cases. And the problem was that Sunwing has pilots come in from outside Canada. And in order to get those pilots in, you have to do something called a labor market impact analysis. And apparently they just didn't complete or didn't get approval for their LMIAs. And as a result of that, they didn't have enough pilots to fly the airplanes, but they still sold the tickets. And so essentially what happened was, according to the news, was, they sold these tickets. They were essentially selling a product they seemed not to be able to deliver on. They could not fly the people either to or from their destinations. And they stranded people all over. But the real issue is that they've had extraordinarily poor communication about this. The background is that they're in the process of potentially being acquired by WestJet, which is causing even more confusion. I actually went onto their website just to see what it looked like in the midst of this, and there was essentially nothing. The website had no update on the status of flights. It had no information for people who were trapped anywhere, and families were trapped for extended periods of time in destinations like Varadero and Cancun, and lots of stories about people buying standby tickets on other airline flights for thousands and thousands of dollars to get back. They've also canceled many flights out of some of the smaller destinations in central Canada, again, just because they don't have the pilots. And so, this is just, from my perspective, it's an administrative failure, clearly, because they didn't plan properly. They continued to sell tickets they clearly weren't able to deliver on. But more importantly, the communication was essentially absent. There just really is there really was nothing that was helpful to people, and it caused a lot of anxiety. I suspect that, one of the headlines I read recently was whether Sunwing could support the or survive this. And I would suspect it probably can't. Or if it is eventually sold and purchased by a competitor, its value will be discounted greatly. I'm actually looking at their website right now. It doesn't say anything about this at all. Like, basically, it's just a picture of people floating around in a pool. Nothing about some of the issues that they've been through. Whereas if you type Sunwing into Google, it's just like a litany of complaints and problems.
Well, Mark, some of these, this strikes me as one where it veers into the realm, and I don't know that I can speak eloquently about this, but of almost corporate negligence. Like if you cannot deliver your brand promise, if you promise and consciously know you can't deliver, but try to make the profit anyway. And then I think, I'm not saying they necessarily put people in harm's way, but the level of inconvenience of this is really remarkable to be stranded in a foreign locale with no clear knowledge of when you'll be able to get home. But yeah, I think the broken brand promise, to the degree that you've completely destroyed trust with the consumer, it's hard for me to imagine a service or product oriented brand surviving that without massive recovery efforts. There's also a tension here, by the way, of like Canadian companies being in merger discussions and these things happening. Like Rogers and Shaw were in a maybe similar dance, and Rogers going offline, Sunwing being in a dance with WestJet. I don't think there's necessarily a rhyme reason or algorithmic reason for why this comes about, but these are really inopportune times to have massive corporate failings in the middle of these machinations about corporate mergers, for sure.
Yeah, here's two headlines. I just looked at two headlines. These are both from a few weeks ago. Fresh off, this is in the National Post, which is Canada's kind of right-leaning newspaper. Fresh off $100 million Liberal bailout, Sunwing sticking it to passengers. That's not a good headline. And another one here, CTV News. Delayed emails, empty seats, how a digital communication breakdown may have stranded more Sunwing passengers. And there's a picture there of an airplane coming back as an evacuation flight with many empty seats, presumably because people weren't informed adequately. You know, I think one of the things that Air Canada does very well, I'm a big Air Canada user or have been in the past, is it used to be extraordinarily non-communicative. Now, if you're signed up for the app, it updates you very, very frequently. You know, your phone is continuously dinging and buzzing because Air Canada does have relatively poor on-time performance. And as a result of that, you know, you will get multiple notifications about gate changes, flight delays, flight changes. It's you know, it is 2023. These things do exist. Sunwing should definitely be looking at try to improve that. One of the funny little trivia things that some people may have seen, that to get some of the passengers back, the Sunwing actually chartered the New England Patriots football club aircraft and used that. So some people came back in the lap of luxury in a U.S. professional football aircraft because they were so hard-pressed to find flights and aircraft and pilots and crew to be able to get passengers back.
That's pretty remarkable. So it sounds like there's some goodwill there that they were actually obviously scrambling to fix the problem, but it sounds like it must just be literally a chronically under-resourced company hanging by a thread.
That may not be the case.
Sorry, go ahead.
That may not be the case, but it certainly looks that way. Their communication strategies were highly ineffective, and that's probably a good sachet into a much bigger problem. Sunwing is a Canadian airline. It's quite small. It has limited service. We're going to talk now a little bit about a behemoth, and maybe you could just give us a little bit of an update on what happened to Southwest.
Yeah, I think this is a good transition to Southwest for that reason, because I mean, one of the claims of why the Southwest failure happened was outdated computer systems. And so, Mark, we're on Sunday, January 29th, last night on Saturday Night Live. SNL did a pretty good job of skewering Southwest Airlines about their crisis response. So one of the gags was that they were updating their entire communication system to 2008 Dell computers, a step up from the airline's 2002 ThinkPad laptops. So there's something here about, you know, Southwest having had this reputation of incredible customer service and corporate culture. So these folks were really trotted out frequently as a gold standard of this corporate culture, high loyalty. You know, sort of in Canada we have a brand called No Frills, which is a grocery brand where it has literally no frills. And Southwest was sort of known as this no frills, excellently run, on time, great airline. And they've somehow destroyed all that. And I think it does relate to some chronic under-resourcing. Mark, would you be okay to summarize your recollection of how this went down at Southwest? I think you've read a bit more on this file than I have.
Yeah, there's two parts to this. So the first is Southwest operates a different model than most airlines. Instead of flying a hub and spoke, which means that, you know, like those of you who fly on Air Canada know that they have a lot of flights that go to and from Toronto or Calgary or Vancouver or Halifax, Southwest actually flies point to point, which means that an airplane may go from Buffalo to St. Louis to Phoenix and then on to LA. And as a result of that, if there's a big snowstorm in Toronto, Air Canada just kind of shuts down their operation for a day, and then the next day can kind of resurrect it. They tend not to get stuck with airplanes and crews in the wrong location. And I think Air Canada actually probably has a pretty good communication system. I could be wrong, but I don't think they're going to get into the situation where they don't know where their crews and airplanes are. Whereas Southwest, because it has this system and because there's such limits on how many hours flight attendants and pilots can put into airplanes, they ended up in this situation where they had an enormous storm, which occurred right before Christmas. There's an enormous pulse of people traveling over Christmas, and their IT system basically completely failed them. And so they ended up, there's stories, which I think are true, of flight attendants being put on hold for 10 hours or some ridiculous time by the company while they were trying to report to the company what city they were in, because the company had completely lost track of them. And so then they had airplanes in one place, crew in another place, passengers in another place, and luggage in another place. And they just didn't have the IT infrastructure to allow them to kind of, you know, reboot the whole system and get it back up and running. So if I recall correctly, I could be wrong on the timing, but I think the storm was on a Thursday or Friday. And basically they ran a skeleton schedule for almost a week and literally stranded, I think probably hundreds of thousands of passengers across the US. It was literally 1 week later when they got their schedule kind of back up to 90% of its anticipated. And I was listening to a podcast, which I listened to about aircraft, and they were saying, for example, on a day when American Airlines, which is, you know, obviously another behemoth carrier, canceled something like 100 flights, which is a bad day, but not horrific. Southwest canceled over, I think it was over 3,000. I don't know the actual number, but
actually I've got some numbers here, Mark. I saw an article I found is it mentions that, so from December 21st to December 31st, and we'll put this in the write-up of the podcast, this article, they canceled 16,700 flights in around a week's time, in a 10-day period. So they were unable to process all the flight changes and crews, as you mentioned. And essentially the airline, it sounds like they threw their hands up and just scrapped most of the flights to try to reset the operation. And similarly, they also lost thousands of bags. So they've had this massive recovery effort of refunds and getting bags back up until today.
Yeah, and I think that the big issue from our perspective is, you know, that was a mess. But what you and I are really interested in is their PR response to this and how they responded. So I don't know if you want to just provide some your expert commentary on their PR response.
So I'm going by my experience of it. So I'd have to refresh myself on the actual articles. But I think initially this did not go well. This was not a very proactive and forward-looking PR response. It took days and time to really acknowledge the whole issue. So it was sort of like they were in a full reactive mode of the airports reporting on the chaos, the customers hitting the news feeds with stories of their troubles, and Southwest leadership being largely absent until some weeks later or some days later, when you had CEO and others sort of acknowledging the level of discomfort they'd caused. And starting to make, they did end up doing what I think would be textbook, but they did it a bit too late. So we did get to a place with the CEO of communication with full transparency, pledge to do better and resolve system and structural issues, and also sort of over-the-top strategies to reimburse people. So I heard stories of people having gotten kind of double reimbursement. So had their flight refunded, but then also received a credit for a next flight of a few hundred dollars, which, you know, I think the average Southwest customer, it seemed like the response in the media seemed to indicate that folks felt that that was a decent response. But again, I think a lot too late, and I'm not sure the degree to which the airline is actually recovering. So there is some financial data that I'll try to find here. So Mark, as I look up some of that financial information, what other information have you got on this file?
Well, here's an article from Forbes on December the 29th, and you know, it basically summarizes what we just talked about in terms of why this occurred, but it has some pretty damning quotes in it. So here's a direct quote: Southwest failures admittedly arose from its outdated business practices. This includes the use of decades-old scheduling software, which failed to adjust to weather disruptions, an old point-to-point baggage model that ships luggage from one city to another instead of a modern hub-and-spoke model. But then also, it talks more about the communication issues. And here's what it says, and this is a direct quote. Instead of taking responsibility, Southwest management has responded by blaming the weather, the FDA, and its own employees for the crisis. And that's somebody who's speaking from Boston University's Questrom School of Business. While the airline's executives have kept largely out of sight, refusing to provide interviews, passenger horror stories, unfavorable comparisons with other airlines, and employee complaints have instead painted a picture of chaos and helplessness at Southwest. Repeated apologies from the company's management have done little to reduce people's frustration and have provided little confidence in the airline's ability to restore its services or take care of its passengers. So those are direct quotes from this news article. And you can think that, you know, that's just really going to be hard for them to recover from. Now, they are one of these airlines where there's a lot of brand loyalty, and also they're very inexpensive, and they do fly routes that nobody else does. So this is not going to threaten them by any stretch of the imagination. I'm sure they'll demonstrate that they're back at their previous passenger levels. But this clearly must have eroded confidence in them. And Brady, you have some financials, I think, now.
Yeah, and I mean, to your point, Mark, I think it would be hard now for Southwest to be trotted out the way it used to be as this sort of really pristine and excellently run company. So I think that reputation is gone. It is interesting financially that this does not hurt them as much as one might think. So it says that the holiday meltdown is going to weigh on its bottom line, but it still expects to be profitable this year, the company says. I think ultimately we're seeing a company that will take a temporary financial ding for this operational failure, but that ultimately seems to have enough traction to resume sort of business as usual. And again, I think, Mark, this does raise questions around, like, are some companies too big to fail? I know that's sort of a cliched statement, but we're seeing time and again in some of the files that we're examining here, operational practices bordering on negligence, total failures and breakdowns of communication with massive inconveniences to the people they serve, where brand promise is actually not met by any stretch. And in that context, these companies, particularly that are maybe either low-end providers or like Rogers, part of an almost monopoly of systems in certain jurisdictions, they seem to recover okay, irregardless of their following pristine communications best practices. The other side of that, though, is I do think we should measure things like the broader reputational impact beyond market share and revenue. And I'm not sure the degree to which longer term there is importance to the fact that Southwest just isn't seen as a great brand after this, in my opinion. I don't know how you can make the case that Southwest is a great brand.
Yeah, and I again couldn't agree more. And this, if you read this Forbes article, which we'll put into the show notes, it's actually kind of a communications 101 primer. So I'll just read some more quotes, and I apologize for reading quotes, but they're extraordinarily helpful. Under the subtitle of Don't Wait to Say Something, here's some quotes from a communications consultant that Forbes quotes. Don't let other parties get ahead of your story. The Southwest flight attendants and pilots unions got in front of journals days before Southwest did, allowing someone else to control the narrative in the media by planting words like meltdown early on. It's okay if you don't have all the information as long as you're transparent in saying that, but don't wait. And they actually, here's our mantra right here. Practice crisis communication responses. I'm not saying Southwest doesn't do this, but stress testing your crisis communications response at least once a year will allow your response to be much smoother when something happens in real life. Across all industry in today's world, you're not planning for if you need to use it, but when, because you are going to need it. And Brady, you may recall that they actually, right after this happened, you saw an ad for a crisis communications person within Southwest.
That's right.
I thought was very funny, and we thought you should probably apply for that job because they clearly needed the help of a communications professional. And I can, interestingly enough, I think they actually did hire somebody, because very shortly after that, you, as you just mentioned, you saw them towing the line on communications best practice with the CEO getting onto Twitter with a plain background, apologizing, and then all these, you know, compensation and reimbursement and loyalty bonuses and all kinds of stuff to try to rebuild some of the brand. And you just wonder how much better off they would have been if they'd gotten out there on Twitter and everywhere else 3 hours after it was apparent to them that this was going to be a complete mess. You know, if they just gotten out there and said, this is a complete mess. If you're flying on Southwest for the next week, we apologize right now. It's our fault. We are doing our best, but we are having trouble accommodating to that. We will send you more information. If you are stuck, here's the number you call. And we guarantee that someone will answer that phone within 20 minutes. Here's what you do if your bags are missing. And we guarantee that you will get feedback from us. You know, what we know about today's world is that these things are scalable, right? You just have to call up Amazon Web Services and they have people who can make your website traffic accommodate going from, you know, 1,000 a day to 1,000,000 a day. You're not the first person to have that happen. So, you know, the crisis communications is not just the communications, it's also building the structures that allow you to respond to these things in short order and move on. Just watching the time, we probably should keep moving along. Do you want to give us a little bit of an update on some of your own personal experiences of Terminal 3 and WestJet in above, over and above what you've already made a few comments about?
Well, Mark, I think maybe that is a good segue, but I do want to really point to what I think is one of the general underpinning principles of our podcast. I think the reason we're able to do this is, and it does relate to the WestJet example as well, these events are very predictable in some way. Like to think that WestJet would have a five-year business cycle with no major interruption, that would probably be a pipe dream for most organizations. So part of why we're here is to say that it's predictable that this will happen and these organizations should be ready. And we're quite long in the tooth now on corporate practices around crisis communications that none of this should be foreign. So for Southwest to allow themselves to get into a situation where this was possible, especially a brand that's also trumpeted as this great brand with great corporate culture, to think that then you hit a crisis and literally the wheels fall off completely and it becomes a clown car. It's sort of really unbelievable to watch this.
Well, Brady, I ask you an off-the-cuff question here. So we were talking about this before we started recording, but how did they recover from the Saturday Night Live episode? Like when you've been pilloried on Saturday Night Live, it becomes hard to recover.
Yeah, I mean, some of these things, and I have an old mentor, a guy named Terry Flynn. He's a professor of communications at McMaster in Syracuse. And he always talks about these mind bomb moments. And I think that Saturday Night Live skit might be a mind bomb moment. Like they've got one of the most renowned actors in the world, a guy named Michael B. Jordan, doing the sketch that talks about, you know, the jokes that the airline's going to create a new premier lounge by holding two or three tables at an airport Starbucks and, you know, just really kicking them hard around how poorly they're going to handle things like luggage, like they're going to do. Send everyone's red bags to Dallas and blue to Charlotte. But I get from the media coverage that goes down as like a memorable skit. And so, you know, Mark, you had a clever idea when we were first talking about this earlier today, where it's sort of like the CEO might have to get in on the joke to some degree to try to recover by creating some goodwill that they realize they can laugh at themselves. But I think you really need an extraordinary over-the-top strategy to demonstrate the reliability of your systems to make sure this wouldn't happen again. So Southwest would have to go from this reputation to actually embodying the reputation of being the most reliable, the most communicative airline. And it would have to put systems and structures in place to support that and demonstrate it. It's sort of hard to spend your way out of it in a way, because they did have to do a large spend, which probably relates to their financial outcomes of the last quarter, to remedy with the customers that were affected. So you try to do some customer recovery, but then you've got kind of global mindshare recovery that you have to work at. So it would be hard now to just see a regular Southwest ad saying, you know, we'll get you to Colorado happily, and not kind of scoff because this example's fresh in mind. So you need a new communication strategy that says, here's the new Travelers app we've put in place. Here's how we are supporting staff, et cetera. But you'd have to show these over-the-top strategies and communicate loudly about them to show that you've turned a corner and have become a new kind of industry leader in the things that you used to suck at. So I think it's a tough crucible for them to go through.
Yeah. And I think one of the things, you know, you talk about the fact that they predict still being profitable, but reputation is slowly destroyed in this case. And there are other competitors in their area of the airline market. And you wonder if this doesn't plant the seeds, which leads to one of the other extremely low-cost carriers starting to eat into their market share. If a person is looking to spend under $250 to go from Los Angeles to Las Vegas, and they have a choice between Southwest and some other airline, and the other airline's $3 more expensive, you know, they might choose to spend the extra $3 and fly on the other airline because of the lingering impact of this. And it's really hard to measure that. And, you know, at some point, Southwest started as an upstart and people went from the traditional mainline carriers to Southwest in part because of its reputation. And I just would really be concerned. I also think there's a real opportunity for some of its competitors. Now they have this Saturday Night Live. I can see some great ads. Like one of the competitor airlines saying, well, we use tickets to get your bags to the right destination because we don't believe that every customer has different colored bags, which they can use for their airline to sort them to the correct destination. Like there's not only risk to Southwest in this, there's real opportunity for competitors in their market space, just given how this is now a month old and continuing to be on the rotisserie of public relations.
For sure. If they thought they were getting out from under this by January 27th, when this skit dropped on January 28th, I think it would tell that team that they're back in the crap again, so to speak. So they've got a lot of work to do. Mark, this is probably one we should revisit, digging a bit deeper into their financials and just looking at it next quarter and seeing if we can determine, you know, how is Southwest recovering? Well, one thing is definitely going to be revenue and financial picture to see if they are on the upswing and if they're able to kind of recover year over year performance or not.
Yeah, but I think totally agree. And the other one is Sunwing, again, much smaller airline, but I think an even more clear example of you know, a company failure coupled with a public relations failure of the highest order. Let's just move on quickly to Pearson. I'll just make a couple of comments. So I had I'll use the term honor in air quotes of traveling through Terminal 3 just before Christmas. I don't normally travel through Terminal 3. And it was just a complete disaster area. I've done a lot of traveling in low and middle income countries over the course of my career. And I can tell you that I've been through a lot of airports in low and middle income countries that were both more attractive and cleaner and more organized and less busy and better set up for handling the influx of people that occurs through airports in 2023 than Terminal 3 at Pearson. It was really quite unpleasant. And then we learned, for example, they only have one conveyor belt or something for all of the departing bags. And then, of course, there's mounds and mounds. There's pictures of enormous mounds of luggage. And, you know, it's not just the airlines that suffer from this. I've got to go to a meeting in Orlando in a couple of weeks, and multiple people have suggested to me I should fly out of Buffalo, which is about the same distance from my house as is Pearson, in part because Buffalo flights tend to be a lot cheaper, but mostly because, you know, the Buffalo airport's building a reputation around where I live. As the airplanes leave approximately on time, the bags tend to arrive on time. You know, you don't have to wait for 3 hours after you get off the airplane because you're flying domestically in the U.S. for lots of routes. There's no customs confusion. And crossing the border, you know, it can be complicated, obviously, but for people who have Nexus or other advanced ways of crossing the border, it just takes a few minutes. And so, you know, these kind of disasters also affect airlines and airports and all of the infrastructure and services associated with them. I'm quite sure that somewhere in Mississauga right now, there's a warehouse with an enormous mountain of bags in it, like an enormous mountain. And your colleague's bag is probably one of them.
Absolutely. No, I echo what you say. So I guess it was Boxing Day. Arriving at Pearson Terminal 3 was like a riot, was like an escape scene from a zombie movie. Like hundreds of thousands of people. No one's clear where the line is. There's no staff to tell you what's happening. Stood in line for about an hour at the baggage thing before realizing that we had not moved and that nothing was moving. And then sort of through my own reconnaissance, found that there was an area where you could roll your bag to with your flight number on the wall with like a white 8.5 by 11 sheet, like handwritten, like Cancun AC 741 9 a.m. kind of stuff. So what we ended up doing was placing our bags under this little sign off to the side from the conveyor belt that, as you said, had failed. And again, I knew that was a bit of roll the dice, but the intervening, upon return, there was more confusion in the sense that you filled out this thing and there's an app that's basically telling you there's no new change in your luggage. And when my luggage arrived, I got a call from like a random courier guy, which I might not have picked up. You know, there's so much spam in the world, you sometimes don't answer calls. So I kept getting a call from the 647 number. And there was a guy basically on the line saying, I've got your bag, can I drop it off? So it was by no means high touch, great communication from WestJet. And to date, we are missing a bag without any really clear communication. So I think my next step this week is to write some sort of officious sounding letter to corporate, to their CEO or something, with as much detail as I can include, to say I'd like some remedy here to find out what's going on. But absolute chaos. And again, I think poor communication from WestJet as well, and particularly poor communication to the direct affected clients. And I do notice that the positive contrast, or I guess in this case, the negative contrast, but the positive folks are, I do think you're right about Air Canada. I think Air Canada has gotten into a mode of even proactively canceling some flights. I think you and I talked about that a couple of weeks ago, where I think they're looking ahead more forcefully to offset the irritation of having flights canceled while you're already sitting at the airport. But in this case, I think WestJet's missed the opportunity that electronic communication affords, which is to be in direct touch with your clientele at all times. So Air Canada, and I don't think it's just the app. I think it's also that when you've signed up with your text, you say, oh, I'm okay to receive text messages. They text you a lot, as you mentioned.
Yeah, and you, yeah, I think that's a great point, that highly efficient communication makes an enormous difference. And a very simple example of that is that you'd rather know that your flight's been canceled the night before than the morning of, when you've actually checked out of your hotel, made the trip to the airport, cleared all the airport rigmarole, and then you arrive. And you know as well as I do that the airline knew the night before that airplane hadn't come from Vancouver to Toronto. So there was no way it was making it from Toronto to Cancun. They knew that a long time beforehand, but they didn't bother to communicate it to you. And you know, that it's dead simple. They should be able to do that. You know, again, I mentioned I used to travel enormously, and I've acquired a lot of tools over the years so I can actually trace the location of my aircraft, because airlines tend not to be very accurate about disclosing where your airplane is. And many, many times I knew where the airplane was when the person at the desk, who couldn't be expected to know it, didn't have any ideas. We can just have a whole podcast just on horror stories of traveling and lack of communication, because everybody who travels frequently has them. We should probably just move on quickly to talking a little bit about some of the updates from the previous things. So I think you had a bit of an update on the Rogers show, which we did a long time ago.
Yeah, so we mentioned, so Rogers had a couple of massive outages that affected up to a third of Canadians. And again, I would say relatively poor proactive communications on the part of Rogers corporate. At the same time, there's a multi-billion dollar merger with another telecommunications firm called Shaw that was underway. I had hypothesized that the competition tribunal might stop the merger in light of the poor performance of Rogers during these outages. And as it turns out, they seem to have skirted any kind of legal consequence related to the mergers as a result of their poor performance. So I think on two occasions now, the courts have sided with Rogers that merger should go ahead. And I haven't heard much beyond that, but it seems like in terms of consequences for a major failure to fulfill its brand promise and essentially not doing the one thing it's supposed to do, this firm seems to have kind of skirted a lot of responsibility, both financially and legally.
Although I will say that Rogers, I'm still a Rogers customer, demonstrating the stickiness of Rogers customers, and they've given me a whole bunch of free data for 2 years, which I don't think they would have done if they hadn't faced this issue of all potential erosion of customer confidence. And I'm just looking at the news here. And in fact, the most recent news was from 5 days ago, as you mentioned, that the Federal Court of Appeal has rejected the Canadian Competition Bureau's appeal to block Rogers' takeover of Shaw. So Rogers will therefore, I presume, be taking over Shaw. And if I were a Shaw customer, I don't know what Shaw's customer service and service has been like, but I'm sure that you will experience a change when suddenly you turn on your phone and it's Rogers Communications rather than Shaw. I do enjoy the extra data. I've actually been using it. So, you know, I think that is a benefit. You've got some financial information there, I think.
Yeah, I was also just looking up how's their share price been affected over the last 5 years. So it definitely hit its lowest point over this crisis in October. However, it seems to have rebounded to at least an average of the last 5 years of its stock. So it's definitely not, the highest point was in April of 2022. It looks like it reached $74 a share over the last 5 years. That was its highest point. It's now down $10 from that to $64 a share. But in terms of the last 3 or 4 months, it's just been on a general recovery upswing. So again, this looks like it created a little valley for Rogers, but not some kind of sustained loss of business. Although I think we should go back to this and look at this again over the next few months as well. Can we calculate any massive change in their fortunes as a result of poor communication during an outage?
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And again, it's a metric of weighing the stickiness of communication customers and the difficulty of transitioning against the brand erosion which occurs in circumstances like this. So maybe we could just move on to wrap things up in the last couple of minutes. Do you want to give us the communication professional summary of the episode? What you think? What are the lessons learned? What should these companies be talking about? And then maybe we'll just talk a little bit about, for one paragraph or so, on our potential future plans for the podcast.
Sure. Yeah, I think for me, Mark, the number one thing that stands out here is that companies absolutely need to have a crisis plan on the books that's practiced. So that's I think that's in the literature as a best practice. Absolutely think a crisis fortune or misfortune is predicated on how much work you've done preemptively before you ever make it to the crisis. I think for service businesses that have a longer term interaction with clients, like an airline, there's also a lesson here about the periodic levels of communication with clients. So we're really blessed to be in this technological world. And I think that it isn't hard to have rhythmic communications with people through their cell phones. I think every brand that has an ongoing relationship with a client should be aspiring to that, especially, you know, you're essentially, when you're traveling, even when you're not on the, when you're not on the airplane, you are still feel like you're in the care of Air Canada or in the care of WestJet or in the care of Southwest when you're on your trip. So I think in those intervals between before I leave my house to a little after I get home, I feel like that is a range that the airline bears some responsibility for my experience. And I think that there's some really great ways to take advantage of communications to ensure you're building goodwill with your clientele. And again, you can't always get everything perfectly, but it is the timeliness of communication when you inconvenience people that really seems to determine how they perceive that. An apology can do great repair, but only when it's authentic and makes up for what was lost. Mark, you wanted to add something?
Yeah, I think the other issue that I would take is the CEOs of these corporations are making ridiculous amounts of money. And as a result of that, they should have ridiculous expectations around their availability to deal with these kind of issues. And you know, if you're running an enormous corporation and you're jetted off to the Antilles for your holiday, you know, that jet should be sitting there in case there's a crisis that you need to come back for. And so you can appear in front of that blue screen on the Southwest website. And more importantly, you probably need your communications team traveling with you. You need to take that highly skilled communication professional so that they're sitting beside you. And when something strikes, they advise you and you listen about how you should be communicating this. And then the final thing I think is that, you know, it is 2023. There's an awful lot of high quality electronic tools. There just really isn't an excuse nowadays for not having a website that isn't able to respond to these kind of things. It's not news. It's not new. You don't have to invent anything. There are companies that do this. And if you're a big corporation, you need to have state-of-the-art technology because the technology moves forward so quickly.
Mark, you make an excellent point that I think we should add to the board as one of our best practices. I can't see a world in which a core competency of a CEO of a large company isn't communications in general, and crisis communications aptitude as also an absolute necessity in 2023. Again, you often remind me are a bit of one of the mottos of the podcast seems to be, you can build a business over 37 years, but destroy it in 37 seconds. Perfect example of how to offset that is a competent CEO who's capable in a crisis moment. I can't imagine it not being part of the checklist of what you need to be a good CEO.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I think, again, even small companies should probably think about that. So Brady, maybe just a quick summary of where we're going. This is our fifth podcast. It's hard for us to get listenership data, but we seem to have some people listening. We've really enjoyed doing it. We've had, I think, a lot of, I wouldn't call it luck. I would say something that's obvious to those of us who work in this area. These things happen all the time. We've been talking about continuing the series, which we think we will do. We've been talking about developing a communications program, maybe as a subscription service for those people who want to learn a little bit more about the science of this. One of the things I've learned is that these kind of communication strategies are not an art. They're a science. They're learnable. They're something you can have in an electronic book that you carry with you. And if you follow, as you would say, the rhythmic that's required to fix a problem like this, you can mitigate a lot of the damage. I don't know if you want to just give your thoughts on where we should continue to take the podcast, so that if anybody's listening and is wondering whether we're going to grow it or what the plan is, we could help them to understand.
Yeah, Mark, I'm in full agreement. So one thing is, we've had a couple of these episodes out of the now 5 episodes we've done. 2 or 3 of them, I think, could be larger series within the podcast. So we've done some on sports reputation management. I think that's a great topic, as we see the effect of individual behaviors on large brands and huge ebbs and flows of financial performance as a result of a sport player entering a crisis and how it's handled. The other we've done is influencers. So a whole new economy online, largely individual driven businesses that where there's a lot of money at stake. When you look at someone like Mr. Beast, who's probably worth close to $250 million now, and he's a 27-year-old YouTuber. And the third is the evidence-based practice thread that we were looking at. So there's a lot of literature on public relations practices that I think we can draw from and make accessible. And then on that note, Mark, I think you're right. I think what we would like to do is start creating some online resources for professionals that are interested in broadening their scope and ability. So I could see us having a one-pager available for download, as well as a course. I definitely encourage folks to go to our website, www.thecrisisbeat.com. And there is a contact form through that website. Would really encourage people to write in about the resources they'd like to see. But I think, you know, a multi-hour communications and crisis best practice course is something I could see us putting together in the future. So stay tuned for that. And please write us in if you have other ideas.
Yeah, thanks, Brady. I think that's great. So we'll probably just wrap it up there. This has been the Crisis Beat number 5 for the 29th of January, 2023. Always stuff happening out there. It's been a pleasure talking with you again, Brady, and look forward to the next episode. Thanks.
Thank you, Mark. See you in a couple of weeks.